Welcome to episode 3 of the Family Medicine Revolution podcast. My name is Cody Mitchell-Tree. And on today's podcast, I had the privilege of talking with March's member of the month, Jeremy Fish. He's been involved with the Academy for a long time. He's been on the Medi-Cal Task Force. He's a FPPAC donor. He serves on the Medical Student Resident Affairs Committee. And he's also the founder of the Medical Education Network. So let's go ahead and listen in on my conversation with Dr. Jeremy Fish. All right, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Fish.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
So just curious if you could tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a family physician and what interested you in family medicine to begin with.
Oh, sure. Yeah, for me, it all started with a family doctor that I had who took care of our family, and it was really nice to get to know him. He would actually call our house and ask about how people were doing, went for following things up, and I just really developed a personal relationship with him. Dr. Bauer was his name. This was in Napa many moons ago, and that sort of inspired me to think, well, maybe medicine would be a good field for me. And so, you know, that led to getting into medical school eventually at UC Irvine. And while I was there, I actually was leaning towards doing internal medicine. And then I began to realize, you know, I had such a wide variety of interests that I couldn't really pin down one aspect of care that I was most interested in. And so I bobbled between OB and primary care internal medicine, and then just decided that family medicine would be the right thing. And several of my mentors, older students than myself, like David McDonald and Stuart Foreman and others who were in my medical school, or at least McDonald for sure. I'm just realizing Stuart, I think, went to UCSF, but people that I knew were going into it. And these were people who I really respected in medical school, who were really doing a lot of human outreach, a lot of community efforts. They were really engaged in leadership and activity. They were real activists. So I think the activist part of family medicine also was an attraction for me. So those are what sort of led to my finally deciding that family medicine was the right field for me. And I every day realize what a wise decision that was. So I'm very happy with the decision I made.
Great. So what do you like most about practicing family medicine, or even being a teaching family physician?
Yeah, well, I honestly like the variety. I find it very intellectually stimulating to challenge my mind and my abilities to help people in a wide variety of settings and a wide variety of conditions, so that every story is interesting for me of the patients that they bring to us and the questions that they have. And I find that I'm effective in a wide variety of settings, and that really that's how patients experience the health system, as they flow through various settings. And I really found it really a key that I know the whole system of care because I've trained within all the different varieties of the health system. So it allows me to really have, I think, a broader perspective on what it's like to be a patient. And I think in the end, that's what really matters the most, is I think the sense of connection to the experience of patients in the healthcare system. As I mentioned, you know, having a personal relationship with our family doctor when I was a kid, that was meaningful. This was a special person contacting our family. Oh boy, I'm going to write a paper about what it's like, you know, to go and have a twisted ankle and get it fixed. And so I think the connection to patients is the primary piece that has kept me going and working with people who want to be connected with patients. And then the other thing has been more recently leadership, as I've also come to realize that because family physicians, and myself included, work across the health system, we have a really broad perspective of what's going on all over the place. A lot of other specialists are sort of trapped in certain places. They work just in the operating room, or they work just in the ICU, or they work just in the clinic. And because we circulate around a lot of different areas, I think it gives us a broader perspective as leaders about how to connect the various parts of the healthcare system together. So ultimately, I think integration, you know, fragmentation is the disease of healthcare, and integration is the solution. And so I feel like I'm in the midst of a specialty whose entire course is about integrating care, integrating services, integrating relationships. So it just feels very right for me.
Gotcha. And, you know, this is a pivotal time for our healthcare system with the implementation of the ACA. So I'm just wondering, you know, what do you view as the biggest opportunity or challenge for the specialty over the next, you know, 3 or 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those rare experiences where the society is sort of turning towards primary care and saying, you know, what is this primary care that we need? So I think the fact that family physicians connect well with people and can converse more in kind of lay terms about the healthcare system and what we're about, that we have a real powerful opportunity to advocate for primary care services especially and for the patient-centered medical home. I think the concept of the patient-centered medical home just really resonated with me because it was a way to really emphasize the teamwork required to take care of patients and the leadership required to take care of patients. And I think that combination of leadership and teamwork is a strength of our specialty, because teamwork is really a lot about role clarity and communication and respect and trust. And those are things that I think we really have strength in. So one of the challenges we face is that as a specialty, we've tended to think of ourselves as less than everybody else. You know, I'm almost as good as an internist at taking care of, you know, patients with X, Y, and Z disease. I can almost do it as well as a pulmonologist. And by comparing ourselves negatively like that, we've kind of learned to see ourselves as not that valuable. And I think, and we have, there's a sort of humility to our specialty that almost moves into martyrdom, that can be paralyzing at times, I think, and has us where we're not necessarily willing to advocate or promote the strengths of our specialty. We're too often explaining why we deserve a right to participate in different activities in healthcare rather than recognizing that we're really part of the solution to access issues and people getting common procedures. And so I think that overcoming some of that humility and being willing to promote the specialty is a new thing for us, and I think that is going to be important as we try to advocate, particularly with the legislature. Many legislators don't really understand what family medicine is. They don't understand what primary care is. You know, they think the only place doctors come from is medical school, so they're not really familiar with the whole residency or graduate medical education system. So there's a lot of education that's required out there, and there's a lot of us family physicians. So if even just a small percentage of us put a lot of vested energy into advocating for the specialty and especially for our patients getting access to strong patient-centered medical homes, I think we have an opportunity to have a major impact on how the ACA and Covered California and Medicaid expansion and all of this succeeds. Because without primary care, this can't succeed. And so it has to be strong and vibrant. And the only way it's going to get there is for us to be advocating with legislators and policymakers to be sure the resources are brought into the right direction to develop exactly what our communities are asking us to do.
And I'm wondering if you could go into detail about some of your experiences advocating for family medicine or telling people how they can get involved.
Yeah, well, so there's two sides to that. One is the actual advocating is often quite a positive experience. You know, legislators are generalists just like family physicians. They have to cover an enormous amount of territory and landscape in the legislature. And so if we approach them from an educational basis of, hey, we want to teach you about what primary care is about, and this is why we think it's important for your communities, and begin to engage in that language, legislators really understand that, you know, and they're very eager to learn more about it. And so I think that's been a very positive experience that the legislative people and policymakers and their staff, once they kind of get it, they have a lot of enthusiasm for being helpful. And I think that's been exciting to see. On the other side, trying to get family doctors to advocate for themselves, I have to admit, is a little bit frustrating. And part of that is because they're so dedicated to their clinical care that it's very hard to get them to, cancel a clinic or not go to, you know, an important quality improvement meeting so that they can take some time to get over and do the advocating. And that's the piece, because there's so many of us, it seems if we really put some thought into this, that we need to figure out a way to free ourselves from the clinical activities that we're doing so that we can be present and get there, because policymakers are face-to-face people. You know, if you're at the end of an email or you're at the end of a phone or, you know, you're writing a letter, it's not that real to them. It's the people who show up in their offices that I think have the most influence on them. And so our inability to get a critical mass of people, or the struggles and challenges getting a critical mass of people, family physicians, into the offices of the policymakers has been frustrating, although I think we're making progress. And I'm really excited because I think the younger generation gets this intuitively, and they, you know, have social media and all other kinds of ways to engage in activism that I think is very, very exciting. And I believe the next generation of family physicians, it will be a natural part of their work to be doing the leadership and advocacy with the policymakers so that we can sustain the gains that we're making right now.
Absolutely. A lot of students and residents will be attending the all-member advocacy meeting, not this weekend, but the following weekend, and participating in lobby day. So I think the future is definitely bright in terms of advocacy.
Yeah, that's what I did. And I think they're the most important people for the legislatures to meet. They, you know, a lot of these legislators come out of being teachers, they work in education, they're interested in healthcare. And if they see face-to-face with an enthusiastic family physician, resident, or a medical student interested in going into primary care, you know, that means a lot to them, because then they know they're contributing to the long-term well-being of their community. And that's honestly what most legislators or policymakers are after, is they really want to see improvements happen. And if they can see the young people embracing this and willing to show up, I think it means a lot to them, because they're not used to seeing doctors. And certainly it's challenging to get residents, because we still, you know, work in a system that, you know, we have to restrict them to 80 hours a week, and most people working 80 hours a week, you know, can't take 5 hours to go meet with a legislator. So I think it's great that the CAFP is setting up these lobby days so that they can get a taste of it and then begin to realize, you know, hey, they can see their local legislators without it being as difficult as they think. Because I think once people actually engage in it, most of them have a very positive experience and want to do it again. So I think that's right, that the medical students and the residents, to me, are the most important people to be engaging with the policymakers now.
And changing gears a little bit, I wonder if you could talk briefly about the Building Bridges initiative you've sort of taking control of.
Well, yeah, this has sort of happened in a nice organic way, and I would say that the beginning of it was an irritation that the program directors were having, that the only time we ever saw each other, you know, there's 40 or 50 of us statewide in California, and the only time we would see each other was when we were sort of pleading for funding from the Song Brown Commission. And so after a couple of years of complaining to each other, Walt Mills and Hector Flores and Jeff Haney and I and several others decided, well, why don't we try to set up a meeting for ourselves so that we can gather and get to know each other. And that was the NIDUS for the 2011 Song Brown workshop that Callie Langton and CAFP supported vigorously. And we made it a workshop. And I led that workshop, and along with a lot of the other program directors, we were really pleased with the strategic priorities that came out of there. And one of those strategic priorities, we made four solid ones. One of those top four was collaboration across our programs. And everyone, it was unanimous that people wanted more collaboration, and yet we really didn't know how we were going to manage to do that. But what slowly evolved was that we could build regional collaboratives And by developing regional collaboratives, we would increase the social and educational interactions between the programs within these regions. And that has sort of, I believe, sparked the interest of others who are in those regions, the medical students and residents and the CAFP chapter folks, to say, hey, you know, we can gather by region as well, and that begins to solidify the communication and integration across the educational spectrum. So that, you know, what is now evolving, I mean, I kind of see it as and it was the medical students and residents that thought up the building bridges concept, and I was just very excited when I heard about that from CAFP. And that building bridges was specifically to have a workshop that integrated all of us together. And so that session happened last fall, and I think was very successful. And we sat by region, and so everybody got to know each other, and that has continued to grow in its momentum. So really the program director network plus the building bridges, which was predominantly medical student and resident driven, kind of together have become this medical education network. And I think that it will continue to bear fruit, and a lot of the early emphasis has been on advocacy and pipeline development. And so I think those two high priorities will really carry us through the next 3 to 5 years of integrating ourselves and working on CAFP, GME, graduate medical education, and medical education priorities. Kind of brings us all together so that we're focusing on a few things together so we can be successful and kind of build on that. So I know our program's a member of the Greater Bay Area Collaborative, and we're having regular meetings now, whereas that had never happened for the many years that these programs were in the Bay Area. We had never met except for periodically. The UCSF programs would meet once or twice a year, but we're now having regular sessions, building in faculty development, and building in relationships where residents and medical students can work with faculty across several different programs who are very interested in specific topics like global health, women's health, ultrasonography, procedural care, PCMH, that these themes now can gather interested people from a variety of programs, and then that builds momentum. It's very hard to innovate in a single program because of limited resources, both people and money. But if we innovate together, it tends to get critical mass, and that's what we're seeing happening kind of across the state. There are several other regions that are seeing similar energy and activity, so it's very exciting to see this unfold.
Absolutely. And one final question. So a lot of residents will be transitioning into practicing physicians in a few months, so I'm just wondering if you have any advice for those residents.
Well, yes. I mean, it's advocate for yourself, because advocating for yourself is advocating for your patients. You know, there's a necessity for a positive work experience, because if the people and staff working are having a positive experience, then the patients will have a positive experience. And really, the fundamentals around that are going to be taking on leadership roles wherever you can and emphasizing teamwork. Because if there's teamwork in your office or your hospital or your whatever area you decide to focus your career in, you're going to have a much more positive experience, because you're sharing the blessings and the burdens of healthcare. Because if the doctors just take on everything themselves, we just get overloaded with paperwork and in baskets and, you know, patient calls. And so we have to welcome other professions into the relationships that we develop with patients, so that they can help us, and they'll, by helping us and helping the patients, they will tap into the really meaningful work that we're doing. Because you don't want to overload yourself and just crank through seeing 50 patients a day. That's not a sustainable work experience. So the graduates are really going to have to advocate for themselves of the value that they provide. That's not just seeing a patient in their office. There's a lot of other value that we provide to our patients, and that's going to be more and more true as utilization of the electronic health record allows us to assess the populations under our care. And so they just, you know, they've really got to recognize that the patient-centered medical home is the solution for the patient's experience and the staff's experience in the clinic. And so there's one thing they can carry into their new workplace. It's how are we doing with our PCMH transformation? And take that question wherever they go and make sure that they begin to influence their work site, because I think that's what's going to be sustainable, positive experience for them and for their patients.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to speak with us, Dr. Fish.
Thanks so much, Cody. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and congrats on being the March Member of the Month as well.
Not well-deserved, but I appreciate it anyway.
Have a good one.
All right, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Family Medicine Revolution podcast. I just want to remind everyone that a week from Saturday is the all-member advocacy meeting. So for those of you who will be in attendance, I'll see you there. And also, if you haven't registered for the 2014 Annual Scientific Assembly, go ahead on over to familydocs.org and register online. The next episode of the FM Revolution podcast will be a special edition, live from the all-member advocacy meeting, with interviews with students, residents, physicians, and advocates of family medicine. So stay tuned.